This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Judy Marks. Judy is the CEO of Siemens Government and Technologies, Inc. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm looking forward to this discussion. We talk about the federal marketplace and energy technologies and that sort of thing. But first, Judy, I know you just relatively recently have come to Siemens. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, how you got to Siemens, and where you came from, and that sort of thing?
Sure, Roger. Well, I've got over 27 years of experience as a federal contractor, and I've really had the pleasure and privilege of working for several great enterprises. I've had experience that ranges from engineering to program management, business development, and I've also, again, had the privilege of leading divisions within federal contracting companies. And I now am leading the federal division of Siemens.
Well, and with that point, can you tell us a little bit about, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's a relatively new organization or element within Siemens. Can you tell us, the thought behind it and what you helped accomplish with and your goal, strategic goals sort of thing?
I'd be happy to. So Siemens Government Technologies is a special security agreement, which is really the secure entity of the Siemens company that can do business with the U.S. government. We've done business with the U.S. government for many years, but never in a real focused organization with an attempt to provide solutions, services, and products to the U.S. federal government that Siemens provides throughout the U.S. and throughout 190 countries in the world.
Well, with that focus and looking to where the federal government is going. And when I think of Siemens, I think of infrastructure projects, energy savings, that sort of thing. Can you talk a little bit about the marketplace, where it's been over the last two or three years, and sort of where you see it going as well?
Sure. In the federal space, it's really interesting because when you do think of Siemens, you think of infrastructure, healthcare solutions, as well as energy solutions. So we've got products and technologies. We've always been an innovative company, a pioneer in innovation for over 160 years. But now to be able to bring those projects to the federal customers who need off-the-shelf products, who need very price-sensitive products, who need the ability to solve some of our nation's imperatives in health, in energy, and in upgrading our infrastructure, I think Siemens is well positioned to serve those needs.
Well, can you give us a couple or an example of the investments that the government, and when I think of the investments, I think of the Recovery Act, for example, and a lot of infrastructure investments there, investments in renewable energy sources, that sort of thing. How do those type of investments ultimately save the taxpayer money?
Well, I think we all recognize we need a sustainable country with sustainable efforts, and a lot of that revolves around energy efficiency. So while Siemens isn't alone, we certainly offer solutions ranging from lighting to water to building technologies that can help solve today's problems with off-the-shelf technology. And we can do it with some unique performance contracting vehicles that really allow the customers to basically use the money they would have expended and reinvest it in advancing the state of the art.
Well, are those like energy savings, share and savings type contract vehicles? Is that what you're talking about?
They are. Performance contracting vehicles have been used really throughout this country and throughout the world for several decades. The U.S. government now believes that that's a very viable contracting vehicle to be able to enter into a long-term agreement with a partner, and there's lots of us. There's about 16 contractors on both the Department of Energy and Energy Savings Performance Contract and the Army Corps contract, and it gives both, it's a win-win for everybody. The taxpayer doesn't have to pay any money. The contractor works with the government agency. You develop a baseline. You figure out what can be saved. As the contractor, we guarantee those savings. It gets financed. And all of that is wrapped into a performance contract for could be 15 or 25 years.
And is that, you know, how is the demand for the use of those type of vehicles, has that grown over the last, because it seems to me with our budget challenges, right, and continuing resolutions and uncertainty in funding, this is, it seems to me a fundamental way that the government is going to have to do business in the future. You see it in all kinds of different projects where it's either privately financed, like I think about, which I have to deal with every day in Tyson's, you know, the Hot Wayne development, which is privately financed, but it's an infrastructure project. But also, just is this you know, going to become more the norm from your perspective in the way the government's going to be trying to accomplish its goals?
Yeah, I think we're seeing this really take a step up in terms of access, availability, and adoption. If you think about a few years back, we had the stimulus, we had the Recovery Act. Those don't exist anymore. Funding is challenged in every agency and in the Department of Defense. So everyone's looking for creative contracting vehicles that can accomplish objectives while saving the taxpayer money. This is one of those options that is gaining acceptance, and I think we'll be hearing more from the administration on it shortly.
And are those, you've mentioned the Department of Energy has a set of contracts. Is GSA doing anything in this area that year?
Well, right now, anyone in any agency can buy off either the DOE or the U.S. Army Corps vehicle, and many agencies are doing that.
With regard to energy savings and those funding challenges, I know that you all are in that infrastructure space. Are state and local governments taking advantage of this of that approach as well? Are you seeing that, or is that not really your focus?
Yeah, we are seeing many cities. As a matter of fact, they're leading the way, because when you really think about where that economic crisis happened first, the cities and the state governments are the ones who got hit the quickest in terms of, you know, flow downs and the lack of funding. And they have all gotten very creative. And what we find in the cities is that they really are looking across their whole enterprise. So while you may have a Department of Public Works, you may have water, you may have all different departments forming that municipal area, they're really coming together to figure out how can they make their city more livable for less investment for their citizens.
And it's that, as I understand, you know, Siemens' big picture sort of strategic vision, that is the making cities, you know, the technologies to help make cities more livable, more efficient, more friendly, frankly, is something that Siemens has been focusing on. I think it's one of your strategic visions.
It is. We actually have committed to a business that we call Infrastructures and Cities. And what drove us there was a pretty in-depth analysis of the megatrends impacting the world. And it's interesting because the migration back to cities, the urbanization of multiple countries, both developing and developed nations, is happening around us. We saw it in the U.S. Census here, and we see it in China, in India, in all the developing nations as well. So when you have the ability to start fresh, that's great. But when you have to work with legacy systems, especially in infrastructure, you have to find ways to do that economically. And that's really what we're focused on, is how do we make this planet and the cities here more sustainable, more efficient, and places where people are going to really want to call home.
Well, across that, can you talk a little bit about some of the key technologies in that, you know, help make it more a livable place that are going to create efficiencies, both from a federal government perspective and just, you know, in city governments, what, you know, across the board?
Sure. And, okay. You know, there are a lot of challenges out there, whether it's water treatment, whether it's electricity demands, whether it's the grid itself, and some challenges, you know, as we just keep having more demand in this nation. When you think about the Department of Defense, they're the largest single user of energy in this country. They use more than Walmart. They use more than even GSA.
That's saying something when you use more than Walmart, right?
but because of that, they're trying to become more efficient. And every city manager has that same challenge. How do I provide at least the comparable services for hopefully for less money. So some of the technologies, when you think about it, could be everything from literally power transmission, distribution, generation, all the way to think about the federal data centers. I mean, when you think about 40% of the power used in this nation is used in buildings, not in automobiles, not in aircraft, it's in buildings. Well, we have solutions for buildings, and they range from low and medium voltage, switch gear, all the way to get power from the outside of the building into the building and distributed. We have the ability to do fire suppression systems. Again, we own Osram Sylvania. We provide lighting. And when you think about where we're going with solid state and LED lighting, there's just tremendous areas for improved way of life, cost savings, and improved technology.
Well, Judy, right now we have to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more with Judy Marks, CEO of Siemens Government Technologies, Inc. And we're talking about the government marketplace, infrastructure, energy savings, healthcare, IT. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
This holiday season, give the gift that money can't buy. When you donate blood with the American Red Cross, you give the perfect gift. Another hug, another laugh, another smile, another chance to someone in need of blood. And unlike the latest fashion trend, video game, or golf club, the perfect gift costs nothing but an hour of your time. Visit RedCrossBlood.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to schedule an appointment today. Give the gift of life and help unwrap a lifetime of memories for patients in need.
Hey, Lucas.
Hello, Angie. You ready for dinner?
Yeah. Hey, is that a new radio for your ride?
Sure is. Went to Walmart for the Pioneer DEH-44HD with HD radio built in.
HD radio?
HD radio is digital broadcast radio. Digital sound, new channels, no subscription fees.
From Walmart?
Great values there. Only $120 for a Pioneer HD radio receiver.
Forget dinner. Let's get my car and head to Walmart.
HD radio. More radio, more value. Now in the car audio department at Walmart. Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Judy Marks, CEO of Siemens Government Technologies, Inc. And when we took a break, we were talking about the government infrastructure, city infrastructures, and how technology can improve the lives of our citizens and efficiencies for government. And Judy, one of the things you mentioned that I'd like to follow up on a little bit is you mentioned smart grids and microgrids. What are those?
Well, it's interesting because you hear the terms sometimes used interchangeably, and really a microgrid is a subset of a smart grid. And we deal, at Siemens, we deal with all 300 utilities in this nation because we're in power generation, transmission, and distribution. But what a microgrid is it's really a self-contained island of really electricity transmission, distribution, and utilization. And it really is a grouping of smaller scale generation, storage, and allows the consumers to function autonomously. So in the event of a disaster, a base would have the ability to basically self-generate and to continue to be able to support its mission, even though there may not be power in case of a natural disaster or worse, you know, another threat.
Okay, and so that seems to me it is a technology from a government perspective that would be sort of focused on installations, right? You have microgrid for that particular installation. Is that where you're seeing the investments made?
We are, and I would tell you right now it's being done on a base-by-base decision, and there are different approaches to it. Some people are applying renewables technologies, whether that's solar, could be wind, could be bio-waste, lots of different options. Others are starting with energy efficiency and then moving on to have an architected microgrid. And again, the goal is that in the event of an emergency, you can disconnect from the traditional power grid, which is really where the most of us as Americans obviously get our power from, including the Department of Defense and as well as the civilian agencies at all their locations and campuses.
And so in contrast, I'm not a techie,
okay.
I confess very from the beginning here, or at least I don't call myself one, but a smart grid. What is a smart grid?
Well, a smart grid really lets you have the ability to control how you're generating from a demand response standpoint, how you control the demand, and how you can basically match or balance those so that you've kind of got load balancing going on, if you will, from multiple sources. You know, we have this real focus on moving to renewables as a society. The challenge is they're not 100% reliable. You can't depend always, especially here where we live, on a sunny day. You can't depend on wind, you know, 100% of the time, or obviously at night in terms of solar. So you want this match of technologies in addition to some traditional technologies, because we will always have legacy systems, and for a while we will still have some very existing generators that serve their purpose. And the goal is to really get to more of an end state where everything is demand driven and you have the ability to balance those loads. And ironically, you also want the ability simultaneously to be able to charge appropriately. So it's almost like you think about any sort of charging infrastructure.
Sure.
And it's interesting because we actually supply electric vehicle charging infrastructures.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you know, the GSA is looking at that, as are many government agencies, as they try and find more sustainable solutions to mobility. And when we look at mobility and infrastructure there, you know, there will be peak times that people will be charged more.
Right. If somebody comes home, they've got their electric car, right? They come home, they plug it in for the night. And,
right.
And, you know, you've got all the commuters across, you know, Northern Virginia with their electric cars.
And it's not just the consumers. Think
right.
of the fleets.
That's right.
So
that's
they're really two main users to, you know, mobility infrastructure. And that's what we're looking at as well.
Yeah. Well, harking back to, you know, when I was at GSA, just by way of example, is that one of the areas where GSA, with its fleet, was a leader back in the 80s was actually airbags.
Hmm.
and, you know, trying to sort of, you know, buy, you know, push the technology and buy airbags for the fleets to get it out there, get it rolling. And you see sort of the same thing GSA is doing now with alternate fuel type vehicles.
So it's a great early adopter approach. And when you think about the government writ large, and you go back in time from a technology standpoint, there is no better organization to be able to be that early adopter, to be able to help set standards, and to be able to give enough momentum to a nascent technology to make it more commonplace. And right. then the rest of the consumer market will take over in a lot of cases, as they did in airbags. But, you know, that's our government has done that. Go back to the early NASA
yes,
days,
right.
and it's been proven to be successful.
Government investment drives technology and change in many cases.
Yep.
Absolutely. One of the interesting quotes that I've seen that I wanted to ask you about, because I really like it a lot, is this term balanced holistic approach to mobility. Can you, you know, expound on that for us?
Sure. It's interesting because I know a lot of your listeners think of mobility from an IT perspective.
Yeah.
Of mobility, the M kind of has a little different connotation that starts that word. Because for us, it's all about the enterprise movement of people and goods. So it truly is that how we, in a city, in a geographic area, how we make it more livable and sustainable, especially focused on the transportation element. So at Siemens, we actually build a third of the light rail that's supplied to this nation. And we build it here in the U.S. We're the only U.S. Manufacturer. We have a contract with Amtrak to provide 70 electric locomotives for the Northeast Corridor. So to
us, that's a good thing, having someone who is from the Northeast Corridor.
That's two of us who ride that line a
yeah.
lot. But when you think about airport management solutions, again, think about the ability to move people and goods. A lot of people call that logistics. We call it mobility because we are that transport layer. But the transport layer there, again, is different than the IT community's used to. For us, it's parking systems. It's intelligent traffic management systems. It's the command and control of all that intermodal traffic and those hubs that control traffic flow and people's lives through the application of technology.
I don't know a lot about, you know, locomotives, but, I mean, I assume the electric locomotives are more efficient or effective than other technologies. It's sort of an investment that will, you know, have returns for Amtrak.
Absolutely. If this didn't make the business case for Amtrak, we wouldn't be here doing it. But the other part is we are a major player outside the U.S. in high-speed rail. And we've been very successful in Europe and China and other locations. Right now, we don't have high-speed rail in this nation, and that's still a debate that's happening both here in Washington and at the states. When the time comes, Siemens is prepared.
Yeah. And let's just shift a little bit, and because Siemens does have, and you have a lot of responsibility, and you have a lot of products and services that cut across the government enterprise. And another area that your technologies, are cutting edge is in healthcare and healthcare services. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what role you're playing in the federal marketplace with regard to your, you know, imaging technologies and who you're serving?
Yeah, we are a major provider of imaging technologies in the federal marketplace. We really go across multiple modalities, as we call it. So whether you think about a CAT, PET, MRI scanner, whether you think about X-ray machines, mammography, or actually diagnostics, hematology, all of that, that's core to what we've been doing at Siemens for a long time. So we supply that commercial equipment to VA hospitals, DOD hospitals, and really do hope to expand within Indian Health and some of the other federal agencies. Again, just taking commercial off-the-shelf technology and being able to apply that to government hospitals the same way we supply hospitals throughout the country.
And that, you know, you can't understate, from my perspective, you know, the government's ability to take advantage. When you mention the word commercial, you know, technologies, that's, to me, that's a key. Although we mentioned earlier how government, you know, can lead in many cases in terms of the development, like the example of the fleet and airbags. But at the same time, the government has a great opportunity. I think it needs to go back and think about access to the commercial market and accessing commercial technologies, because that's where the most bang for the buck is going to be.
Well, the interesting part that we're seeing, we have a very large healthcare systems, IT systems business, all commercial, and we've got a full product suite that goes from electronic patient records to hospital management, billing, handles the payers, handles everything. But of the 10 largest healthcare systems in the United States based on annual revenue, VA's number one and the military healthcare system's number nine. So you've got two of the big 10 in the federal government. So the challenge is, are there applications that don't require tailoring, that are good enough, whether they be bought and used or whether they be used in a cloud environment, in a secure cloud environment? Are there those commercial applications that can be applied? And that seems to be the direction that we're seeing. A lot of emerging demands. A lot more veterans coming back.
Judy, I have a commercial demand right now. Okay. I got to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Judy Marks, CEO of Siemens Government Technologies, Inc., and we'll talk a bit more about that healthcare and those commercial technologies. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Please join Jim Fleisig December 13th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss emerging technologies and their role in federal government technology programs. The panel includes government leaders from the VA, NOAA, and U.S. Air Force. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum, Tuesday, December 13th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Isilon Systems, SourceFire, and EMC.
You can help the Army Historical Foundation honor the soldiers of yesterday and today. Go to armyhistory.org to learn how you can help build the National Museum of the U.S. Army. The museum will be the Army's national landmark, preserving the sacrifice of every man and woman who has worn the Army uniform since 1775. Visit armyhistory.org today and honor the Army's service of every generation.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Torno, the world's largest watch store. Torno. The Fashion Center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Previously on the Fed's telework panel discussion sponsored by HP and Intel, Nigel Ballard, the director of federal marketing at Intel, discussed.
HP and Intel had spent a lot of time and money doing research into the federal market, trying to work out why it lagged behind the private sector. That the private sector had slowed down its purchase of desktop and increased its purchase of notebook computers because they were embracing mobility, and the federal government wasn't doing that.
Work is something you do, not somewhere you go. Learn about the future of telework in the federal government at fedstelework.com. Read more on telework resources and get connected with Feds Telework on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. If you missed the Feds Telework panel discussion on Federal News Radio, you can listen on demand at fedstelework.com on the issues directly affecting federal employees and the way they do business. Learn about the future of telework at fedstelework.com. fedstelework.com.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Can I help you?
Hi. Well, I just moved here and I need a new boombox.
Easy answer. The Insignia boombox with HD radio. We have the coolest radio stations here in town broadcasting with HD radio technology. HD radio receives those broadcasts.
Is that with the digital HD2, HD3 channels?
Yes. Plus, the Insignia boombox with HD radio is only $99.
Wow. Well, that's just what I need. Lead the way.
Insignia HD radio receivers. Get them now at Best Buy. HD radio. More radio, more value.
Wouldn't it be great if you could recapture some of the energy used to light all of those holiday displays?
Put your hand on a light bulb and you'll feel that along with light, it produces a lot of wasted heat. Vinayak Dravid of Northwestern University says he can tap some of that. He helped engineer a material that becomes hot on one side and stays cool on the other, then turns that temperature difference into electricity.
Part of the light bulb could be hugged with this thermoelectric materials and then can be fed back into electrical grid.
Dravid says the material's unique chemistry allows electricity generation at 10 to 15% efficiency.
We are continuing to improve it further, but even at the 10 to 15 of waste heat converting back to useful energy is an absolute paradigm shift.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Judy Marks. Judy is the CEO for Siemens Government Technologies, Inc. And Judy, when we took a break, we were talking about healthcare IT. And it seems to me, you know, one of the areas where we as a society and a government obviously has to deal with, you know, in partnership with industry, is how to reduce healthcare cost. And it seems to me healthcare IT, the handling, like you mentioned, you know, patient records and, you know, being able to transmit that data, that all the data, and there's boatloads of data in the healthcare system, is going to be making that more efficient and effective, both in terms of how much it costs to do it, but also just better outcomes. It seems to me that healthcare technology is going to be key to that one. Can you get
Roger,
your thoughts on that?
There really are challenges facing, you know, the healthcare community today, and that's not unique to the government. That's really across all of industry, and really some of those challenges are, you know, how do you migrate from legacy systems when you still need to operate your hospital on in terms of day-to-day operations? How do you deal with data security and privacy? And then, you know, how do you deal with the emerging demands that we're seeing, especially in the VA, for all of our returning warfighters? And, you know, that really does take a special place, I think, with all of us in terms of honoring our obligations to those who serve. I was going to share with you, and I think this is not unique to Siemens, but it's something we're certainly committed and proud of, is that we've made a focused commitment to hiring veterans. And of our little over 3,000 openings we had in positions this year in the United States, of our approximately 60,000, you know, employees here in the States, we've committed 600 of those, and we are right on track before December 31st to bring on 600 veterans to fill those 3,000 positions. And they're fantastic technicians. They work in sales. They bring that leadership ability, that technology bias that we as a company really appreciate. And, you know, we just appreciate their service to this nation.
Well, Judy, I have to tell you that is the wonderful thing that Siemens is doing. I wholeheartedly endorse it. And you know what I'm going to tell you is, like, one of the things that I'm going to invite you all to do is the Coalition for Government Procurement. We put on training session each year, or at least one of them, maybe two this next year, next calendar year, where we invite companies to come share their experiences and lessons learned in supporting transition of our veterans into the civilian workforce. We also invite DOD. We had all the services there at our last meeting talking about the transition services they provide veterans, and it also is a great networking session to just learn more about how we can support our veterans. So trust me, Siemens will be getting an invitation to come and participate in that event next year.
We'll be there.
Okay. It's a great segue or a great discussion on our veterans. In terms of IT, but getting back to IT technology and just how that can save money, where do you see opportunities? You talked about, replacing the installed base as a key feature of that. Are there other areas where you think that the government or just generally there are opportunities to save money?
Yeah, there really are. I mean, the current state of technology really has the ability to put your patient record on your phone, on your smartphone, and to be able to really transport that with you, through your life and have that as an electronic file. And that's the ultimate that we all want. We want the data where we can control it, where we can show it to that second opinion doctor and have the ability to be able to do that on request and on demand.
That, to me, that's a real life example. It seems to me, just I'm thinking about it, is if you have your records with you, your medical, they are your records, your personal records. Instead of having to, go back and ask, your other doctor for them and have them send them or whatever. I mean, I think that sounds like it would, make the process much more efficient, right?
It would, and it's a really neat intersection of mobility technologies. In terms of IT, it's an intersection of imaging. Advancements.
You have your images right on there.
You
yeah,
bet.
Exactly.
It just gives you that ability to really really kind of know yourself, and when you choose to share that with the medical community as appropriate. And you can find that today. We actually have an app on the iPhone that does that as Siemens.
Oh, wow.
And you can find that a couple
well,
other
that translates, listen, I'm simple. I finally figured out, you have all the imaging technology. You got the app for the imaging technology,
you bet,
right?
You bet. It's all about end user delivery, isn't
That's
it?
That's right. That's absolutely
the really case. It really is. And we are, we're even in the consumer space. One out of five Americans is wearing a Siemens hearing aid, of those that are wearing hearing aids. And I think something people don't know about us is we process over 228 million healthcare information transactions every day through a private cloud that we have at Siemens for commercial hospitals. And we've been offering the service for almost two decades. We didn't call it a cloud at the time, right? They were called data centers and services.
Yeah. Yeah.
But today it is absolutely that secure cloud on a private network. So it is achievable. It's achievable in a secure manner. And, we're looking forward to, other opportunities to provide that.
It's interesting. That's one observation about the cloud. It is just I guess it's an update. It's a 21st century version of the data center, right? I guess. but that's really interesting because, one of the things that actually, and I sometimes on the show do refer back to my previous life, but I did work on data centers when I was at GSA, advising the the contracting folks and awarding contracts for data centers. So I that really, sort of resonated with me that it has been around for quite a while, and it can be done securely. Can you talk a little about product lifecycle management? That's something I guess that Siemens does. What is that? And I understand you have a software package.
We do. We have a whole enterprise software suite that really, in the simplest of terms, think about computer integrated design, computer integrated manufacturing, configuration management, data management for product development, for both commercial companies, for aerospace companies, and for the government itself. How do you get to that digital image, that digital repository that defines a product, keep it under configuration control for its life cycle, including any variations? It could be a ship. It could be a jet aircraft.
Could be something NASA's building, right?
Could be any commercial product. Yeah. And we've been very successful worldwide. The product's basically known as the Team Center product. And again, we service both the government and commercial customers with it.
I'd like to shift a little now, Judy, if you don't mind, and talk a little bit just about, how the marketplace works. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is sort of strategic alliances and teaming to meet government needs. Are you seeing more of that today, given, the challenges it seems to me increasingly complex challenges that our government is facing?
I think you're seeing two reasons, and the answer is yes, we're seeing more of it. One is the complexity of the problem we're trying to solve, and not all companies have the whole solution. And I think we in industry recognize that. On the other side, though, there's an application of resources to basically secure new business. So I think you're seeing an industry where the budgets are potentially declining, saying, how do I optimize where I invest in? And if I can enter into an alliance where perhaps I don't have to pay 100% of the way, but I bring three people together and my probability of win goes up, that's the right business formula.
I hadn't. That's so makes so much sense to me that I didn't think of it. But can you talk a little bit too about what you see as I think you sort of touched on the biggest factor, sharing the load to try to and maximizing opportunity to win. But what are some of the key factors that you see in successful alliances or teaming?
Sure. Well, it starts with the customer, understanding their mission and what problem you're trying to solve. And You know, Roger, I'm an engineer by background, so I kind of decompose it into these sections,
that's
if
right,
you will.
Pieces, right?
That's right. That's right.
Modular.
Chunks.
Right.
So it has to start with what's the need, what's the requirement, what problem are you trying to solve? But then there are a lot of other considerations. There are technical considerations, there are product offering considerations. But if you asked me, probably the one factor that sometimes gets overlooked is culture. And every company's got a unique culture. And when you talk about working together with other companies, teaming really represents that joining of forces for that common goal to solve that customer problem. And most of these arrangements tend to be for long durations. Not a lot of recompetes these days, certainly not a lot of new starts. So when you ally yourself,
infrastructure,
right,
especially,
right.
Yeah.
So when you ally yourself with another company, you're really making a commitment for multiple years. So if the cultures don't align, you're going to have some challenges going forward. So that if you'd ask me, what's the one thing people may not think about when they think about teaming, I would tell you it's culture. And can the people get along at the leadership level and at the working level to, again, solve that common problem?
Judy, that's a great observation. And right now we do have to take our last break. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Judy Marks, CEO of Siemens Government Technologies, Inc., and we'll be right back.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Phil Cerulli is the CIO for the Managing and Operations Contractor of the Energy Department's Savannah River site. He says the National Lab is seeing benefits from a major ERP implementation.
There's all kinds of savings because we had a mainframe. We've had a number of people had a support code written years ago, and it's scary if those people retire, then I have a major concern. Now we're able to shut down a number of those applications. We have already shut down about 10. I think we've got about 5 to go.
Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
NASA says it's launched an internal app store. The apps at NASA's site is only available to the agency's employees and contractors. It'll serve as a home for a suite of mobile applications that provide secure access to NASA's internal IT systems so employees can perform critical job functions from anywhere. The apps will be allowed on both government-owned and personal devices. They'll be hosted and supported by NASA's Center for Internal Mobile Apps in Huntsville, Alabama.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. March for Babies! Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Are you a Washington Capitals fan?
Who, me?
Do you live for wearing that red jersey?
Well, yeah, I do.
Then you're going to love the DC Lottery's new Washington Capitals Scratcher. Not only is there a top prize of $50,000,
what?
There's a second chance drawing to win one-of-a-kind prizes, like 2012-2013 regular season tickets.
Oh, that's awesome!
Or a chance to be a Cap for a day with a VIP experience.
Man!
Like to win season tickets to the Caps?
Yes!
Play the new Washington Capitals Scratcher.
Woo!
Only from the DC Lottery. Lots of people win.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the Coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common-sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the Coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Judy Marks. Judy is the CEO of Siemens Government Technologies, Inc. And Judy, when we took the break, we're talking a little about cultures and strategic alliances and that sort of thing, and you made a great point. And I'd like to just shift a little bit and, you know, look at the other end of it and that partner, the federal government, and in particular, talking about government-wide contracts and... Can you talk a little bit about the role they play as a business channel for a company like Siemens?
Sure. They're certainly an important tool. GWACs are certainly an important tool. Certainly, they give you ease of use in industry and for the government. We don't think they should be the only tool. There are lots of ways to contract, but they have a role. And they have a role where, you know, you can get to common terms and conditions, all that be pre-negotiated. If there are too many of these, the ones that are well done and well managed will rise to the top. In our view, and we've seen it in the past, the others will just attrit. So it's hard to tell what the right number is. Are there too many? Are there not? But at the end of the day, those that work will get used, and those that don't really will just atrophy. The challenge to industry is, how do you know which one to invest in? So
right.
which
That's
means
the hard part, right?
Right, which means you try to get on more just so that you're not left out.
Right, and that's a great point. And actually, one of the things that Bill Gormley talked about in his show last week is, you know, in this current environment, you got to make sure you as a contractor got to be in many different places.
We call it access.
Right,
you need access.
Those channels, you don't know which ones they're going to end up using.
You bet.
And do you have any thoughts, just to follow up a little bit, about what vehicles if you're looking at one that performs well, what are a couple key characteristics of it? Is it the uniformity, clear terms and conditions?
Some of those are absolutely some of the key elements. I would also tell you the ability to have, you know, quick and open discussions. That's necessary on both parts. So industry, we've already provided everything in terms of rates and pre-negotiated terms. But when a task order comes out, and you know, I know you've heard me say this before, the most important thing you could do, if I were going to make any recommendations to acquisition from a lot of years of experience, is get industry involved early. I know there's always hesitation about equity and fairness, but if you get industry involved early and it's an open and transparent process, we all gain versus having to go through protests, versus having to go through elongated procurements. That makes a difference.
Right, and that's consistent with, you know, Dan Gordon's Mythbusters campaign, the idea that especially requirements development, early communication with industry, who's in the business of providing the requirements to give feedback to the government, is vital to, and I believe this too, I think you can't, the more you talk, the better the outcome is going to be, the better understanding of both sides about expectations, leads to clearer contract terms, better performance. It is, to me, it's a fundamental aspect of procurement that, you know, I think over the last 5 or 6 years, you know, the government's been hesitant to talk to people. And I think, you know, the idea of talking, we can't afford not to right now, right?
The so much gets structured and defined up front. And you can define up front for us, you know, as far as even to contract award. But, you know, the success of a project really takes two things. The well architected, you know, early phase solution, making sure that the requirements are clear and consistent, and then the actual application of resources, which is on us to make sure we do and meet the commitments we said we were going to meet. With those two, you're going to have a successful program.
Right, and it seems to me that well-articulated, you know, set of requirements determines how you apply or what you apply in terms of those resources, which leads to the outcome, right?
It goes from skills to technologies to everything you do.
I'm interested too. You start out as an engineer, and you've obviously been in management for several years. How did that transition occur? How did you get interested in wanting to be part of a you know, management team?
It was pretty simple to me. I wanted more reach and impact. Especially you go back. I started in 84. And that was kind of pre all the teams and integrated product teams. You know, the PC had just come out. It was interesting times back then in terms of technology. But what I did notice where I was working is that management had more reach and impact. And if I could find a way to accelerate that and make a difference, that's really what I wanted to do. You know, the challenging part of that transition is no different than for anyone who steps into a leadership role. You have to trust the people around you. You have to delegate effectively. And then you have to hold them accountable and give them every tool and ability to perform. And you got to let go and state the objectives, make sure they understand them, and then move forward with the team.
Yeah, and we're really getting close to wrapping up. And I just, you know, I know you've been in the federal marketplace and working for contractors for like 25 years or so. If you could make one, or you had one observation of how we could collectively sort of improve the system, what would you point to? Is it that issue of communication?
I think it certainly is getting industry involved early. I'd also ask us, you know, this market's very cyclical. You know, it's almost my third decade of living through it. And we go through these cycles where the government outsources, the government insources. We can learn. You bet.
They
all have different
oversight,
different terminology.
Right.
But we seem to relearn lessons. And I think if we could, you know, as a leadership team, industry, the government together, maybe through the coalition, kind of step back and say, what worked and what didn't work in the past before we learn that lesson all over again.
Judy, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's been a great discussion. This is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and I'm Roger Walden.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.